Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
It's time for our final love guru on our February love month. On our, maybe in our February, during our February
it's
love
February,
month.
It's February, so let's pâté.
Dr. Helen E. Fisher, she's a biological anthropologist, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, author and expert in the science of human attraction. Tim and I need a lot of help in this area. Dr. Fisher has written 6 books on the evolution, biology, and psychology of human sexuality, monogamy, adultery, and divorce. Gender differences in the brain, the neural chemistry of romantic love and attachment, human biologically based personality styles, why we all fall in love with one person rather than another, hooking up friends with benefits, what? Living together, other current trends, just to, you
can
know,
talk about
want to throw the, no, we, there's some things we just, I don't know if we can talk about, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
And the future of relationships, what she calls slow love. HelenFisher.com is the website. HelenFisher.com is the website, in case you didn't hear me say that twice.
What's the website?
She joined us right now. Helen, are you sure you know what you've gotten yourself into coming on this show?
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, that's right. There's always the hang-up button, right?
No, I don't ever do that.
No. You have done so many interviews. Do you have any idea how many interviews you've done?
No.
Thousands.
No idea.
Thousands.
Oh, yes. I mean, an awful lot. I mean, I've been doing this for 40 years, for heaven's sakes, and it's an evergreen topic. I mean, you know, everybody's interested in it, so yeah. I get maybe 10 to 15 calls a week from the press, so it's a lot.
10 to 15 calls. And you took my call. Thank you very much for answering my email. So good to have
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. I really like to share these ideas. I mean, I think we all, nobody gets out of love alive. We all have our problems. And actually, I'm very optimistic about the future, but I do like to you know, share the information.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So listen, we've been interviewing couples during the month of February who've been married 50 plus years and asking them what's their secret. If you were me, no, forget that. I started that poorly. By the way, I want to apologize to all our listeners at the start of the show. I've got a horrible, horrible man cold. I am just dying. So can I get a little sympathy from Helen?
You sound good to me. You sound very good.
That's my radio voice.
I wonder what you're like when you're normal.
Well, I talk like this when I don't have a cold. So listen, what do you think the secrets are? You know, I mean, it's kind of a goofy question. I actually don't like the question. You know, what's the secret to a 50-plus year marriage? What do you think the secrets are?
Oh, I'm just not even thinking. I think I know some of the secrets. You know, I put people in brain scanners. I and my colleagues have put over 100 people in brain scanners. And among the people, we put a group of people who were in and just fallen happily in love, then people who had been rejected in love. And then we started putting people who were in long-term marriages into the brain scanner. They kept on walking into my lab, our lab, and saying they're still in love with their partner, not just loving, but in love with their partner. So we put them in the machines. Nobody believes that one can stay in love long term. And we found activity in an awful lot of brain regions. But among them, well, we certainly found activity in a brain region linked with intense happiness, with feelings of romantic love. The dopamine system was very active. We found activity in brain regions linked with feelings of deep attachment. But what I found most interesting is those people who scored very high on a happiness scale, just a questionnaire that we give before we put them in the machine, showed activity in 3 brain regions a brain region linked with empathy, a brain region linked with controlling your own stress and your own emotions, and a brain region linked with what I call positive illusions, the ability to overlook what you don't like about somebody and focus on what you do. So this is what the brain says. Psychologists will say a lot of things about happy marriages. They will say, don't show contempt, listen actively, don't threaten divorce. It's all good. Psychology is all good, but I'm trying to add what the brain says. And if, and I would guess that you're long-term happy people. I don't know what they said. I'd like to hear what they said. But they probably were very naturally able to express empathy, control their own stress and own emotions, and overlook the negative.
Okay, man, you just said so much, and there's so much to unpack there. I have to stop at the phrase positive illusions.
Positive illusions.
That's a great name for a band, first of all.
And isn't that cool? Yes, someone I hope listens and takes it up.
Positive illusions.
A prog rock band.
A prog rock band, yeah. Okay, so, but doesn't that basically mean sticking your thumbs in your ears, your head in the sand, and going la, 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 la?
Sure, to a certain extent, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, these are long-term happy partnerships. I mean, it's dangerous if it's at the beginning of a relationship, even before you marry, and you find all kinds of things about somebody that you don't like, you should pay attention to them. But these are people in long-term, very happy marriages, and they say they're happy. The brain shows that they're still in love with the person. It shows that they're deeply attached to this person. And it's these three brain regions. Sure, they're able to. And I'm a good example. For 18 years, I went out with a man who was so slow. Oh, man.
Mentally or physically?
No, he's a slow walker?
He did
all kinds of marathons, but he walked slowly, he talked slowly, he thought slowly. But when we went to a museum, he would look so carefully at a painting, and then we'd go out to dinner, and he would talk all about it. Or we'd go to the theater, and he would read about the piece of theater beforehand, and then talk very carefully about it. So I would say to myself, okay, Helen, you know, he's walking slowly, he's talking slowly, but that same slowness has given me a host of other things. We used to get into bed at night. He read me all of Shakespeare. He read me all of the great books. I'd choose the book. He would read it to me. And that very slowness gave him an incredible sort of depth of understanding and even kindness, and that was magnificent. So I had to overlook the fact that I was always walking 3 feet in front of him and an awful lot of things. But sure, it's worth overlooking some things and just going back over in your mind, what's really great about this person? I mean, is it worth it? And indeed, these people who have been married 50 years have thought it was worth it day in and day out, and have been able to overlook that he doesn't squeeze the toothpaste right, he does leave, or she does leave her socks, you know, in the bathroom hanging, et cetera, et cetera. It's worth overlooking some of the things that would drive you crazy and focus on what's great about them. Brain is built to do that. I mean, that's what's so incredible.
Yeah. Listen, these couples have been married 50 plus years. There's something to these couples that I don't know what the right words are, but you can boil it down to the fact that they're from a different culture. They're not as, you know, I know this word gets thrown around way too much, and, you know, and as a clinical person, it must bug you how many times we use the phrase narcissism these days in pop culture. But they, you know, today's human beings who are 40, 50 and under, you know, let's just say 50 and under, but certainly 30 and under, it really is about, oh, if I don't feel the feels, then I need to get out of this relationship. And the commitment level sucks. And so these older people are from a generation where they knew how to spell commitment. And they turned love from a feeling, which came originally, into a choice. And then it lasted. And so can we just wrap a lot of this up into, well, they're from a different culture?
No, I really don't think so, actually, because you mentioned in the beginning about slow love. I'm actually very impressed with the young. I do annual studies with Match.com. I'm their senior science advisor, and I don't study the Match population, the Match members. These are representative samples of Americans based on the U.S. Census. And when I ask, I've got data on 35,000 singles of all ages, every background, 89% are looking for real commitment, 89%. And they actually believe that they can, once they do marry, remain married forever. I think they're getting a very bad rap, actually. And in fact, what they're really doing is putting off that commitment. That's what we're seeing. I call it slow love. What we're seeing now is a real extension of the pre-commitment stage. They want to get, these singles today want to get to know every single thing about a partner before they tie the knot.
Yeah.
And so they're hopping into bed with the person. They're, you learn a lot between the sheets. I'm not advocating it, but you learn not only how they make love, but, you know, are they kind? Can they listen? Do they have a sense of humor? I mean,
do they make the bed?
Do they make the bed afterwards? Do they do the laundry? Yeah, okay.
I mean, the bottom line is what we're really seeing is a different form of courtship. They're getting in very slowly. They will often start out as just friends, and then they will slowly move into friends with benefits and know more about them sexually. Then they slowly come out of that and tell friends and family. Then they slowly move in together. This is very long pre-commitment stage. And Americans, and probably North Americans, tend to think that this is just reckless. I came to believe it's caution. They are terrified of divorce. They want to make a commitment that's going to be real, but they're going to do it later. And in fact, I did a study with, I wanted to know if I was right. I mean, you know, when you have this long pre-commitment stage, you learn a lot about yourself and what you want. You can get rid of what you don't want. So my hypothesis was, okay, by the time they do marry, maybe they're going to make very stable marriages. So I did a study of 1,100 married people, and I asked a lot of questions, but one of them was, would you remarry the person you're currently married to? And 81% said yes. So I think what we're seeing is not a generational thing. We are seeing the young being very cautious. They want the commitment, but they want to, a lot of them are living at home. Almost two-thirds of Americans in millennials in their 20s are still living at home. But they're saving their money, they're getting their jobs, they're getting their career in shape, and then they are willing to catch feelings and sort of make that long-term commitment. I think we may be heading towards a relative family stability only because we're marrying so much later.
So interesting. Man, you're easy to listen to. Okay, let's go to this topic, religious people. So my show is Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show. I interview religious gurus and celebrities about what people believe spiritually and what gets them through the darkness, you know, the dark nights of the soul and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, there's this stat that's thrown around and half marriages are going down the toilet, and it's now no longer different in the religious world. But let me just be a little bit more specific, because I can't talk about all religious worlds, but within the Christian world, the statistics are not really different. So about the same statistics for divorce are happening in the Christian world and the normal world, for lack of a better phrase. First of all, do you know anything about that? Can you add to that? Does being religious help with marriages or not?
Divorce rate in America today is highest in the Bible Belt. But it's not because these people are religious. It's because they're
related.
Very young.
And, so it's because they're very young. Yeah, no, this is a great point. I'm
and
loving
that
this.
Is the, you know, people will blame it on religion. I've studied adultery in 42 cultures and a lot in America, and religious people are no less adulterous than people who are religious. I don't know whether religious people are less likely to divorce. That's something that I don't know. But I do know that people who are young are much more likely to divorce. And because people in the Bible Belt tend to marry very young because they want to save their virginity until they do wed. So religion is contributing to it in that if you believe that you aren't going to have sex until you marry, you are going to marry very young. But it's not the religion that's creating the divorce. It is marrying young.
So recently, and by the way, I want to remind our listeners, we're on the phone with Dr. Helen E. Fisher. By the way, what's E stand for, Helen?
Helen Elizabeth Fisher.
Yes. No, I like it. She's a biological anthropologist, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, author of and expert in the science of human attraction. And I just want to point out that one of my interns, you remember when you were sort of booked on a show before and it didn't happen? Do you remember that moment?
Oh, man, that was bad. I wrote back to that person. I have not missed an interview in 40 years. That was my very first. I'm sure she didn't believe me, but
that's
the truth.
That's okay.
I still fear. I still worry about that, but it was a good lesson for me. Write it down, Helen. Write it down.
So anyway, my intern came in and said, you know what's crazy? You just booked Dr. Helen Fisher on the show, and look at this book I just got from the library, and she hands me Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love by someone named Helen Fisher.
Yeah.
Huh.
Good. Great.
I know, but this girl's like, what's your name again?
Erica.
Erica.
I don't know. They're interns. They don't have names. Erica, how old are you again?
22.
She's 22, and she's reading your book.
Terrific. That's great. Well, they sell they sell all over the world, and I think in 22 countries and everything. I am apparently the most quoted person on love in the world today, and I think it's because I'm an anthropologist rather than a psychologist.
Yes.
You know, you can call a lot of psychologists, but there's only, you know, we're the first to put people in brain scanners and talk about the evolution of it. Erica, do you like the book?
Erica, do you like the book?
Yes, I'm liking it a lot.
She says it's okay.
Liar.
Good, as long as it passes, whatever. Well, thank you, Erica, and thank you.
On the back of the book, I noticed a little endorsement from someone we've had on the show a couple of times. I love having him on the show, Harville Hendrix.
Oh, yes.
He's great.
Yeah, so good, so good. A mutual friend of ours kind of set us up, and he's been on the show before numerous times. And in, April, we're going to do a regular series with Dr. Sue Johnson. Do you know her?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
She's terrific.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrific. She is a leader today in discussions of attachment. You know, I think that we've evolved, well, I don't think I've proven, but that we've evolved three distinctly different brain systems for mating and reproduction. One is the sex drive, second is feelings of intense romantic love, and the third is feelings of attachment. And Dr. Sue Johnson is the queen of the understanding of attachment and how to create it in a troubled relationship.
Well, I am very much looking forward to having her back on the show.
Now, she's very colorful, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Her father was a bartender, or a bar in Ireland, and she's not a big drinker, but she's just a wonderfully colorful human being, and very sincere, and anyway, you'll have fun with it.
Oh, yeah, we'll have a good time. Now, I've got a guy sitting across from me. He shows up every stinking show and tries to sound intelligent, but his nickname is Tim the Tool, and I'd like to introduce you to him. Tim, this is Helen.
Hello, Helen Elizabeth.
Helen Elizabeth.
Question.
Oh, I like that. I love being Helen Elizabeth.
Zipping back to your first comment about love and it stimulates different parts of the brain, I'm a musician, and I know that different parts of the brain get stimulated when people sing and play and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Now, is there a commonality? Is there, is this love thing stimulate the most parts of the brain compared to, let's say, a musician playing music? Like, do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Same parts of the brain.
They have put people listening to music into a brain scanner, and all you'd have to go on the internet to find the actual details. But generally speaking, you know, Darwin and other people thought that music and singing was the initial form of courtship. All kinds of birds and mammals will make all kinds of singing noises in order to court. So and a good song, when I listen to Beethoven, I feel like swirling and spinning. It's just beautiful. So it's probably driving up the dopamine system in the brain, and that's exactly what happens when people are in love. That brain region that pumps out dopamine becomes triggered. There's a lot of song in courtship. If you went around the world just listening, watching courtship rituals, you would find music in all of them. So I think you're onto something.
I want to know if we can buy dopamine somewhere. Can we get some of that?
Sure you can. You can take cocaine, it'll drive it right up. You can take any kind of speed. You can take various antidepressants like Wellbutrin, and it drives up the dopamine system. The problem is that, it goes down again. I mean, the thing is, you can't just, it's not going to sustain feelings of intense romantic love. The body gets used to, by the way, to dopamine, it gets used to when you take it as an antidepressant or a cocaine, and after a while, you don't get the high because the receptors in the brain aren't responding the way they were. So the only natural, real natural high are the sex drive, romantic love, feelings of attachment, and of course, music, exercise, good food, all kinds of other things too. I mean, every single time you feel anything, there's something going on in the brain. And if you're feeling good, the dopamine system's going to be involved.
All right, it's time to get personal. You ready?
Yeah.
Helen?
Uh-huh. Helen Elizabeth.
Oh, sorry, Helen Elizabeth.
I love this. I love the two of you. That's great.
I spent most of my younger years praying to a God that I wasn't sure existed to have him take away my lust problems.
Mm.
He finally answered, and I'm 52.
Really? What a shame.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, I'm older than you are, and I haven't lost lust.
Easy. Come on now. So what I'm trying to figure out is a couple things. What's wrong with me? Where'd my giddy up go?
Well, testosterone does go down as one ages. It starts in your early 40s and begins to reduce.
Yeah.
There's ways that you can drive it up. I mean, having sex with somebody drives up the dopamine system. Sex is really good for you. I mean, it drives up a lot of brain systems.
Right.
I mean, you know, any stimulation of the genitals drives up the dopamine system, makes you feel optimistic and energetic. With orgasm, there's a real flood of oxytocin, gives you feelings of deep attachment.
Wait, can you buy oxytocin? Can you buy that?
It's Oxycontin.
It's not Oxycontin.
I think there are medical... I'm not positive. I don't study it.
Okay.
One time, somebody sent me something called Liquid Trust. And it was some company in Florida that sells, and it has oxytocin in it.
Yeah, we call that Jack Daniels up here.
But any kind of, actually, that doesn't drive up oxytocin, Jack Daniels. It spikes you with energy, but then it hits the GABA system and dulls you. I mean, I happen to like it, but bottom line is most people do. But it's speed and cocaine and other kinds of things that drive up the dopamine. Chocolate can probably drive. I'm not positive about chocolate, actually. But
you almost had me there.
Exercise can do it.
Exercise. Okay, fine. I guess what I want to bring up to you a quote that I came up with. So is it a quote if you come up with it? How does that work? Anyway, something I came up with.
I'll quote you later, therefore it can be
okay,
a quote.
Okay, all right. It goes a little something like this. We all train the ones we love to act the way they act, and then when they act the way they've been trained, we act surprised.
That's interesting. Yeah, well...
in other words, I have heard so many people, usually women who are, you know, complaining about their boyfriends or their husbands or whatever, but I can see right through the whole thing and go, well, hold on, then why did you do this? If you don't want him to do X, why did you do...
Right.
Why? Because that the whole thing is correlated, and you're training the person to react the way that you... Anyway, you know what I'm saying?
That's exactly right. Well, you've got to... You know, I study personality, and there's different styles of thinking and behaving, and people don't change a great deal, but they can change. We are trainable, and particularly when we're in love with somebody, my God, then you'll do just about anything differently. So I think an awful lot of these people aren't aware that they are training the people. They've got to be, they got to understand that they really are training the person to be that way. And if they don't want that, so I'm not surprised. I hope if they're so surprised that they're pleasantly surprised. Are they pleasantly surprised after they've done the training?
Nobody's pleasantly surprised after speaking with me.
No.
Nobody.
No.
Never.
I know. I'm having a good time.
Here's another thing. I read about this. It might have been Mexico. I don't know where it was, but they're doing these. Oh, no, you know where it was? Duh. It was in California, where we're all crazy.
Close to Mexico.
Crazy stuff like this starts. They're doing contractual wedding ceremonies. In other words, I pledge or I vow, you know, to stay with you, to love and honor and cherish you for 5 years. And then we'll renegotiate, we'll relook at the marriage contract. But right now, I'm pledging to you for 5 years. They're saying that in their wedding ceremonies.
Really?
As opposed to for life.
Right.
There's something inside of me that sees it. Sorry, go ahead.
I've actually advocated some of that myself. In fact, I did a study of 5,000 people and asked whether people would like a marriage license to be like a driver's license that needs to be renewed. And the vast amount of Americans did not want that. But I always thought it might be a good idea, particularly if you're not having children. Because if you don't like the person, you don't have to fight with them. You just let the thing run out.
Right.
And if you do like the person, you've got to be a nice person every day to keep it going.
Exactly.
So I rather like it.
No.
And I think it's more realistic. I mean, we are now in an age, I mean, people talk about technology being the the biggest modern trend, but it's really, the real trend is women piling into the job market in cultures around the world. We're moving towards egalitarian double income families. Under those circumstances, either person is able to walk out. I mean, when we lived on a farm, you really couldn't walk out. You can't cut the cow in half or take half of the wheat field. You go empty-handed.
Yeah.
But these days, both men and women have careers. And if you're in a very unhappy, unstable marriage, you leave. And I think it would be real. I think personally, it would be realistic to have a marriage license like a driver's license that has to be renewed. I think that it would help us understand that this person is a real person. We can't treat them dreadfully. We've got to respect it. We've got to work on this relationship,
yes,
and keep it going. You know, there's three people in a relationship. There's you, there's me, and there's the relationship. And sometimes the relationship needs to go out on Saturday and do something together, even though neither male nor female wants to do that. So bottom line is, if we begin to respect marriage in a new way, that it can be dissolved, I think that we may wake up and appreciate our partners more. But a lot of people, religious people, aren't going to like it. And I think people with children, that might be difficult, because you know, if you're going to have babies, you got to sign up not only for the romance but for the parenting. And parenting these days takes a while. So I think that it would be dangerous for people who are going to plan on having a family.
On the line with Dr. Helen Elizabeth Fisher, biological anthropologist. Wait, let's go through your titles because they're pretty cool. I just like saying biological anthropologist. It makes me sound smart.
Yeah. And you enunciate it so clearly.
And I do enunciate it. It's probably because I'm an autodidactic iconoclast.
Yes. Drew Edward Marshall.
Edward, really?
I don't know. Okay,
so how do you explain, you're from New York, right? You live in New York?
I do, Manhattan, okay. Right in the middle of the city. They're going to have to take me out in a box. It's too interesting.
Okay, all right. How do you explain to a hockey player what a biological anthropologist is?
Oh, there's four fields of anthropology. Culture, cultural anthropology is cultures around the world. Archaeology is cultures of the past. Biological anthropology is the whole evolution of human beings and all the other primates and the genetics and human variation, races, etc. And the fourth field is linguistics, the evolution of language and languages around the world. So there's four fields of anthropology, and biological is just human evolution and primates.
Speaking of primates, Tim, do you have a question?
Well, I was just sort of thinking, ruminating to myself. I'm using big words now. I wonder how the prenup would be affected by having to renegotiate every 5 years. Just because, you know, if you're agreeing to a 5-year contract,
yeah,
then after 5 years, if there is a prenup, then money has changed, income has changed.
Yeah.
That'll really get the lawyers paid up.
Yeah, really. That's...
Well, if you don't want to, I mean, the thing is, it should have a very easy renewal thing so that you just send a sheet of paper in and say, you know, I would like to renew for another 5 years, or I'd like to renew for 10 years, or I'd like to renew for 2 years, or I'd like to da-da-da-da. And the thing is, if you are going to break up, you're going to need the prenup. So I don't see the problem. But when I asked Americans whether they wanted a prenup, only 36% did. We are a very romantic animal. The human creature is romantic, and we can't believe that there might be problems down the road. And I think that if you begin to realize that, listen, you know, we don't take our work for granted. We don't take our friends for granted. We don't take making money for granted. Why should we take our relationships for granted? I think it's a big mistake to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in fact, there's a huge brain region linked with negativity bias, the ability to remember the negative. And that's why it's so important to overlook the negative and focus on the positive.
Oh, you stopped. I wasn't ready. I thought you were going to keep going.
With positive illusion.
Yeah, you threw out a positive illusion, and I went left instead of right. Oh, man. Listen, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this. Might be the cold what is it called? Medication?
Remix.
Or it might be the truth. Helen, you might be one of my all-time favorite guests.
Well, that's a lovely thing to say. Helen Elizabeth, that's what you have to call.
There it is. No, I just love people that can talk fast. It's like your husband, right? Or who, your partner, I don't know, whoever it was that walks slow.
Boyfriend.
I can't.
Oh, the last one. This one talks fast. This one's very
okay, good.
Beautiful.
Yeah, well, good. I'm glad you kicked the last one to the curb before you tripped over it again, you know.
But it was a slow fall.
It was. Slow fall, slow burn, slow love. Dr. Helen E. Fisher, biological anthropologist. Ooh, I love saying that. Senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, author and expert in the science of human attraction. A website is HelenFisher.com. HelenFisher.com. Man, I'd love to have you back again. We'll reach out if you don't mind.
Absolutely delighted. Thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Helen. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. I never know how to say bye properly on the radio show.
That's all right. Oh. You changed the volume on my microphone here.
Oh, man.
I was just thinking, you and I thrive on positive illusions with each other, don't we?
Yeah, you are... Wait, what? I don't even... What?
Too much of anything.
Oh, hey.
Speaking of you and
thank
I...
Thank you, Drew.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that, baby.